Okay, thank you. I decided to make like that instead of writing on the blackboard because I have pictures and it's a bit like that to go. Moreover, my handwriting is very badly readable, not like Gert's. This talk is intended to be only a brief sketch of the problematic and some examples, and a more technical and detailed talk will be this afternoon.
You give the
lecture,
right?
I try. Okay. Now let me. Okay. Once again. No. Okay. The other way. Okay. Well, the stochastic processes in quantum field theory. It's like in Monte Carlo, if you look for it from the numerical point of view. You just realize a sample of configurations. Basic example is this Parisi-Wu stochastic quantization in the 80s, it works down to showing that you obtain a connection to the path integral, and that you can use the stochastic process to obtain the quantum theory. The proofs of the equivalence, as I say, rely on the recognition of a probability distribution over the space of this field configuration, and you have for this Fokker-Planck equation, and you relate this the asymptotic distribution you obtain from this Fokker-Planck equation to the path integral. So you can define a perturbation theory. This was, without gauge physics, this was the original intention of Parisi and Wu, but there are also a lot of other possible application. Now, from the point of view of numerical studies, which is what is essentially I'm discussing, this is comparable with Monte Carlo. There are some advantages and disadvantages, but the reason why for Euclidean gauge theory it has not been really applied extensively is that in Monte Carlo you have a number of properties which are which you do not realize that easily in the stochastic quantization, and then there is a lot of industry of Monte Carlo which arrives at a good library of programs and methods and so on, and at some moment split the interest. And the most interest was on Monte Carlo. But
I thought that in Monte Carlo you can do final steps and put the quantum you do infinite.
Exactly. This is one of the reasons. This is one of the reasons. But it's not a very problematic reason, because you have you can have a good control on the step size dependence. First, you can show, at least in some special case, but including gauge theory, that you can absorb the step size dependence in a renormalization of the couplings, at least partially. Secondly, you can always say, okay, I'll make an extrapolation in the step size. And this also works. And the amount of work is not much bigger than in, larger than in Monte Carlo. Well, essential feature is that it uses a drift force to define the process. The fifth time we always will be speaking about is just if you want the Monte Carlo time, perhaps it's the same. And this makes the method more versatile than Monte Carlo, because you do not need to have the action. And in some cases, this is of interest. And I shall give two examples. It can be directly related to expectation values. It can be directly defined for a certain problem And there may be of interest in cases where Monte Carlo approaches simply does not work. Now, just to recall the usual realization, typically you can realize this Fokker-Planck equation by a Langevin process or by a random walk process. In what follows, I shall always write discretized form and using this Itok calculus for the stochastic processes, which is the forward calculus. Just for notation, for a while, this var theta will be the fifth time, and delta of this theta, the time step, we were looking when Jürgen and I did started these things. We are looking for notations, and we didn't find a better one, but this is just like that. And for each degree of freedom, for instance, phi of x, you write down a drift force and the updating procedure says at time theta plus delta theta, you have to add to the old value of the variable the drift force multiplied with the step size and some noise. And the noise, if you want to have the correct quantum problem with the usual, thank you, with the usual Heaviside dimension, so h bar equal 1 and so on, then you have to have here a 2. And this is proportional, the noise is proportional with square root of delta theta. This is, you know very well, this is a general feature of stochastic processes. It also means that, for instance, when you write a function, what happens, you want to implement the process for a function of the variable, you have to go to second order in the Taylor expansion, just because of this square root of delta theta in the noise. The random walk, on the other hand, is that you just add to the variable or subtract a value, if it is a real variable. And for this adding or subtraction, you define a probability distribution given again by the drift force. So you have both possibilities. And in one occasion, I shall show application based on that, in other based on that.
These are completely equivalent.
Yes. In the end, are equivalent, but because of this step size dependence Eduard was mentioning, this may differ. This step size dependence is also, is to some extent, is also flexibility. Because, for instance, in Monte Carlo, you'll be you'll have a problem if you do not, you are not careful with detailed balance and so on. Here you do not, because this kind of things enter is the error due to the step size. So, for instance, simultaneous updating of dependent variables, yeah, just gives another coefficient for the step size dependence. So you may see this this also as a flexibility. So relation to the path integral, as I said, is obtained through the Fokker-Planck equation. And you can show if the, this Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian, which is essentially what is here, you can show that you'll have an asymptotic distribution if this Hamiltonian is well behaved and has a is positive semi-definite and has a gap, then you have an asymptotic distribution which is just e to the minor s if k is the gradient of an action. Okay, now, as you see from here, I can have a more general drift. The Fokker-Planck equation still makes sense because it's directly related to the drift. It only implies the drift. But you may have lose part of these properties here. For instance, you may have and this is the typical in gauge theories, that you do not have an asymptotic distribution on the set of field variables, on the potentials, the drift. But you have, you can show, you have an asymptotic distribution for gauge variant observables.
This is not just a factor of the gauge group for the gauge variables. Is it just given overall factor, or really doesn't converge at all?
No, it does not converge. If it not knows, yes, it goes into algebra, and the algebra is not compact. But or it may go to limit cycles and so on. But the quantity of interest are well behaved. How you calculate? The expectation values you obtain either by essentially the average over noise, which means that you can, for instance, let the process go for a while and then take a time average, this fifth time average over it. As usual for stochastic processes, you have these properties that the time averages and the ensemble averages are related up to square root, one over square root of the time and so on. Just to show you how it works, for instance, here plaquette averages by Langevin equation or random walk compared with Monte Carlo for 12 to the 4 lattice SU2. You cannot distinguish. This is Langevin, this is random walk, and the line which goes through the points is Monte Carlo.
Is it a function of coupling?
This is a function of beta. So this is SU2. So typically this begins to go in the scaling region.
These are the asymptotics. You're not comparing the numerical efficiency getting to this distribution.
No. It's not so easily visible, but I think there are something like 100 by 50, this is 5,000 steps. It's quite 5,000 configuration. So 100 configuration taken every 100.
Is that with a fixed?
Pardon? This is random arc with this delta omega of 0.03, and this was Langevin with delta tau of 0.001. So just wanted to show you how well it works. Now, problems beyond Euclidean actions. You may have another drift force, you may have another action, you may have another noise, all kinds of handling the problem depending on what you want to do it. This kind of things are very much used in modelings, for instance, in statistical physics, called complex system and biophysics and so on. So this is a very, very usual thing to do. In quantum mechanics and quantum field theory, in connection with open systems, continuous localization, for instance, so Langevin equation in Hilbert space, or for special simulation problems, and I shall just show two illustrations. First one, there is no action. We did that with a non-compact version of Yang-Mills theory with stochastic gauge fixing. This is an old idea of Dan Zwanziger, and has to do with what he developed later as a confinement criterion. Essentially, however, is from the point of view I shall discuss, is a question of if you can have a better definition or a better method for fixing the gauge on the lattice. Reason to fix the gauge. Sometimes you need it to recognize, for instance, the dynamical degrees of freedoms which may be relevant, like monopoles, for instance. But they may be also related with this kind of confinement scenarios and other things. In any way, it is a certain problem of how to define, how to introduce, how to implement a reasonable gauge fixing on the lattice. The way normally is done, unless you work with a maximal axial gauge, where you can do it iteratively, the normal way to do is to have a gauge action and take the minimum of it to fix, to obtain a fixed gauge. In this case, however, the larger the lattice, you may have problems with finding the real minimum. You may have problems with finding all the minima. And therefore, it is under circumstances. There are a lot of problems connected with fixing the gauge. And for instance, in connection with this confinement criteria, there are some discrepancies, for instance, now for relations between results from Schwinger equation and from lattice simulation, and nobody knows exactly why. I mean, what is the reason for these discrepancies? And one of the possible reason is a gauge fixing in the lattice. Right.
What do?
Yes, exactly. This is
the keep one and keep all of them.
Right. 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 Therefore, I see when you have a problem on the lattice where you want to fix a gauge, there are a number of maybe technical problems, maybe the question of principle problem. I mean, technical, if you have metastabilities, principle, when you have more solutions. And it might be interesting to have another method which might have a better behaved situation. The idea of Salziger at the moment and what we work at the moment was, at the time, was to add a gauge fixing force. A gauge fixing force which goes tangential to the orbit, so you do not modify the dynamics of the theory. And this gauge fixing force has a number of interesting properties. The gauge fixing force, because it has to go tangential, you can show that it cannot be written as a gradient. So it has a curl into it, in it. Part of it you can write as a gradient, but part of it not. And this means that you cannot write an action for it. But you still can write a drift. This is one of the examples where the Langevin equation is more versatile than the path integral formation. So you can still write a drift, and you can still write a Langevin simulation. It can be implemented for compact theory. In our case, in the examples I shall give was for a non-compact realization, but the properties are the same. What you can show is that it vanishes on the gauge fixing surface. It should. It is strictly restoring near the surface inside the first Gribov zone. And it has diverging modes outside the first Gribov zone near the surface.
What is restoring? What do you mean by restoring?
It brings it back to the surface. It has no modes which takes it away from the surface. And on at large distances from the origin, it's always restoring. So a picture of it is something like that. If this is the first grip of zone, this is a gauge fixing surface, the first grip of zone. Everywhere on the grip of zone, around the grip of zone is restoring. In the gauge fixing surface is zero, therefore it does not change the drift of the variables. If you leave the grip of zone, the first grip of zone, it gets destabilizing modes, and this mode bring you far from the gauge fixing surface. But at large distances, again, these all are provable properties. At large distances, it gets again, it reaches a converging direction toward zero, and it brings it back on the grip of zone. It's a very nice thing. And it looks like that. You start, for instance, here a simulation. This is the action. This is the, I have to look here because this is a squared. The circles are a squared, and the triangles are just d mu a mu, the a squared. So it's just compliance with the gauge condition. So here. A squared goes up. It means it has, this is started away from the grip of zone. So it started somewhere here. A squared grows. Then it follows by a strong increase of d mu a mu squared. It reaches somewhere here and is driven back. And you can show, independently where you start, it will always have this kind of behavior. It drifts along the gauge fixed surface in the first grip of zone. It goes also outside it, but then it practically immediately goes up and comes back into the grip of zone. So with this kind of a simulation, you may be sure that you stay in the first grip of zone. And you can do that on the way. So it's just when you make an update, you already use the gauge fixing force to.
This is for a class of covariant gauges, or what
gauge? Oh, this gauge was covariant gauge of the type d mu a mu equals zero, and we have with a certain parameter, so it was an al here. I don't know, the parameter was put to one for this parameter. For this parameter, if we took alpha very large, it would be lambda gauges. So.
How well is the gauge satisfied? I mean, d mu, a mu, how close to zero?
D mu, a mu is very small. I mean, here it's this value is multiplied by 100 to put it on the figure, I think. So essentially, you stay in the surface. And then you have this kind of peaks when you go out and driven back to the surface.
So later when you collect the configurations, you take care about this for a bit and you don't
think of them? Well, these events are not very frequent. We looked for them, so to say, because they are interesting, but they are not very frequent. So actually it doesn't matter if you take them away or just take all configuration. Moreover, this is a stochastic process, so you normally use what you call ergodicity for stochastic process, namely that the ensemble and time averages are the same, so you can look at your trajectory and take the path which you like. Okay, the next illustration for complex action. You can have a number of problems which ask you to introduce a complex action like chemical potential or trying to do the stochastic quantization in Minkowski. There has been quite a lot of work in the 80s on these problems because it was following Parisi-Wu quantization, and then everybody tried to see how we can extend the method, and there have been both for Minkowski or in general for complex problems and so on. It is not easy. There are some formal proofs for it, but for convergence and for convergence to what you want, it's not trivial to find actually what happens. You'll see this afternoon a more systematic approach to this thing, but this is one of the reasons this was not pursued at the time. You did not need at the moment, because if you just look for the spectrum, you can do it by Euclidean. You have no reason to go to Minkowski. So if you look for such kind of quantities which you can reproduce by making an Euclidean simulation, you will not care for something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Many people.
They get the sign problem. The fermions interchanging, they get the minus sign.
Try to see somehow that number.
We try to simulate fermions to kind of classical statistical dynamics of fermions. It seems not to make sense.
Yeah, they do some analytic engineering and components and some tricks. So when do they have to be one of the tricks?
Yeah.
So there's never any results for finite chemical potential. I don't know of a breakthrough for chemical potential.
Kashid work U1 theories, which were impressive, but then he perceived them to my knowledge, to non-abelian gauge theory. And then talked to him and he said he just couldn't get a converging algorithm
for finite chemical potential.
It's sufficiently large.
Yeah.
As you do a small chemical potential.
But on the way back from Death Valley yesterday, Gert Art convinced me to try to again to try the question of complex action with chemical potential. The point is that I have been working on a model which is easier than the usual QCD, because if you go to heavy quarks and large chemical potentials, the determinant simplifies considerably. So you only have the logarithm of the determinant is just local, it's a sum. And this could make this kind of approach easy, testable. So it's a thing to work on.
I'm trying to understand, this is a practical problem of the numerics, or you have proofs, more or less, it says there. That it should work, or what is the actual status?
Well, I don't know exactly now about the details of the chemical potential problem. In connection with Minkowski time quantization, where the action is not only complex, it's just imaginary, then we have been working, and I said I don't want to take it for it will be what Danish will speak of. I shall only sketch here for illustration some point. So, as I say, just a warm up. How you work, scalar field simulation, for instance, is what I did, Jürgen Berges and myself. First, you have to make a latticization of the problem, and then you have such kind of a Langevin equation. When you recognize all the terms you need, there is a noise, there is a gradient of the action for a five-fourths problem written here. What you get is something like that. Here, for instance, a free field. 12 cubed by 20 in 3 plus 1 dimension. You start the simulation, for instance, by putting some energy on the lattice, because if you put no energy there, it will be just zero. So you put some energy on the lattice. This is the real time now. A time equals zero is one, at all other times is zero. And let it go for a while, and you obtain this nice cosinus, which is what you should obtain. And you can look for the energy, the total energy. And of course, because this is just an algorithm where you can play with your parameter, you can, for instance, turn off the noise. Then you have a classical problem, or put the noise in. Then you have the quantum problem. And the difference, if you just look correctly for it, is just a 3/2 omega, which should be there. So it reproduces what you want. But it already shows you how some points, which we shall speak in a moment about it. You want to calculate, for instance, phi squared. What is that? If you have put the problem, you have your variable, which was a real field, x, say. Instead of it, you have to make now a complex variable, because you have an imaginary part in the Langevin equation, so you produce your imaginary numbers. So your variable, your stochastic variable x, should be replaced by a complex number, a complex stochastic variable with a real and imaginary part. And then you want to calculate, for instance, x squared. Well, you have to take care. X squared, which you want, is not the average of x squared, but is the average of the real of z squared, which is different. You already see this kind of things here, in this kind of simulation. Real of z squared. The other word is x squared minus y squared. In this case, it's a small imaginary part of the mass term, but it's about 0.1% or something like that. You can play with it.
Why do you put that?
One of the reasons is the following. You let the process go. Now you have a time step, which introduces some incorrectness, errors, if you want. You have rounding errors. And this both leads that from time to time you get runaways. There are trajectory which develop a destabilizing mode and go away. We had from our simulation all the reason to see that these runaways are just practical problems related to the step size dependent. Because if, for instance, for a theta of 1, we had, say, 100 runaways at a certain step size, for the same theta realized but with a smaller step size, we have much less runaways. So it was not, it was in some sense dependent, in that sense dependent. The damping was not enough to kill all of them, but most of them. In the case of the free field, we did not have runaways. But for other problems, we had. The free field is too easy. But here, for instance, here is a simulation for at zero mass for a five-force theory, also with a five-force coupling, non-zero five-force coupling. And what you get is, for instance, here, you start with a certain kind of initial, not in the real time, but in the simulation time. You start with a certain initial configuration and let it develop. Independent of which configuration you start with, here you start with just zero configuration, or here you start with a classical configuration. After some time, in both cases, the process relaxes to this curve here.
I'm sorry, what are we looking at here?
I am looking here for the, essentially it's, okay, it's a five-force theory, and you give initial data. So phi of x at t equals 0.
What's actually plotted?
Okay, plotted is the correlation between phi at point time t at phi at point 0, at time equals 0. So it's phi of x.
The same point in space.
Right, right, same point. So it's phi of x and t, phi of x and 0. Now, of course, the phi of x of 0 is not stochastic, it's fixed. So therefore, in that sense, it's phi of x of t. The initial configuration is the same, the values of phi of x at t equals 0. But the starting configuration for the Langevin process is different. Here, we put all the t, we put it to zero. Here we put it all the times to this curve. You let the process go, and in both cases, reaches asymptotically the same curve here. And this, yeah.
Sorry, just to this question, small, yes. Part, except this original question. I think whenever you write down a path integral in Minkowski space, you usually add also analytically damping factors. Think of the Feynman I epsilon. So you always give the real time path, the small thing, and then you think of things in the exclusion sense of sending in the real. So if the small memory loss is one phase, you could also think of
there is some early work by many people, so Clauder work here, Gausterer work here, Hüffel work here. Is some work of Hüffel where this kind of formal proof I mentioned before, they try to do for now a phi cube theory. and they show first for the free field, which is easy, and then they show in perturbation theory for the five cube theory, and in all the cases they can write down the two-point functions and higher function as obtained from the stochastic process. And the art, the kind of expression you have are not well defined as such, but they can make sense of them if they consider them as distribution for temperate, as temperate distribution. So in that weak sense, they can speak of convergence for them. And all of what they show, this is, you can from the beginning, instead of working with the process with epsilon equals zero, so to say, you can put an epsilon not zero, and you obtain the same kind of results. So this kind of formal convergence proof requires this epsilon, if you want, can be done with help of the epsilon, at least at the level of this kind of theories.
Now, what were you saying a few minutes ago about runaways? So you start your simulation, and every now and then you have a trajectory that just seems to run off, and then you just throw it away, and you said you just didn't want that one.
This is the second point. This was the first point was more or less the question of principle, to what extent you need this kind of epsilon, and how you can make sense of these formal proofs of convergence. This is one point. The other point was the following. In the free field theory, there was no problem of runaways. But in this kind of theory, where you have a non-linearity, you can imagine that if something goes astray, it will be amplified. You have a phi cube term here. And what happens indeed is that we find that from time to time, the trajectories. So this is, say, phi, this is this theta, the trajectories look like that, and then the runaways are away. Now, people have already know about that, so there are many ways of trying to do it. One of it is to throw away the trajectory. Another possibility is to say what we did for the moment, why throw away all the trajectory? I can restart here. I just have another trajectory because I use another random number. And indeed, if you restart here, it goes like that for a while. Now, what I was telling is that from our experience with this, these are only practical problems. If we have a step size delta tau of, say, 10 to the minus 4, and make a number of, say, 10 to the 4 sweeps, or if we have a delta tau of 10 to the minus 5, and we make n 10 to the 5 sweeps, we have here maybe 100 runaways, and here only 10. So it's clearly related with the precision of the algorithm. Yeah?
The
amplitude of the noise.
Amplitude of the noise. So what is in this simulation? You can use it whatever.
No, if you use it whatever, you get whatever.
The method works for arbitrary.
Right, but if you want to use, if you want to use, to obtain the relation with the path integral with h bar equal 1, you have to use this normalization of the noise which I put at the beginning.
Yeah, so you might say noise is normalized h bar equal 1, but then
yes, this is what you introduce as initial condition, because this kind of simulation are simulations which depend on Minkowski times. It's not equilibrium simulations, right?
So you have no problem thinking this parameter.
we didn't speak with that parameter, but we played with the other parameter, which is lambda, for instance.
So now there's a different story. So what can, for instance, you do your classical statistical simulation, you start with that, and you then get your evolution of a correlator in time, and you use that as an initial condition for the Langevin update. So you put in quantum corrections a posteriori, and then you see how they build up, yeah? And you see also if you have high occupation numbers, where you expect classical statistical methods to work, then the Langevin updating, incorporating quantum corrections almost doesn't do anything. So that you can do, but otherwise there's no parameter to play with. It's all fixed by your theory.
So exactly.
No. If you put
initial conditions, you can change. Yeah. You
yeah.
can make an initial.
But
in other words, you can study the classical domain and you can study
in the quantum domain.
And then you
so
see
no
how with Langevin time, not with real time, not with Minkowski time. It's a fixed time. So with Langevin time, you can see how it builds up the quantum noise. So correction.
But,
like
but how do you
correction can be of the order of your original and you don't see no, the problems are not really related to magnitude. No, but there are more, as for instance, it's runaway. One issue that
We have, we didn't prove that it is only that, but we have all the reasons by checks that these are discretization error. So effects of discretization and round off error.
The question is so you can use Hubble formula and calculate some diffusion constant and compare
yeah,
to some probability
yeah,
numbers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we didn't try, but there is no reason not to have it. Okay.
So it's up to zero Kugel formula. That's the frequency zero limit. It requires very large. That's
the
mean integral.
The higher order question for this type of
frequency method. Zero limit is the same as to say that this time integral function like this. Right? So this is a lattice calculation, so you give your lattice in time and space, you give your initial field configurations, and then the Langevin updating puts in the changes for the configurations, the quantum corrections. So if you don't have a very large lattice, you don't get zero
frequency. Frequency is this correlator, this function of the function after itself, and then it's supposed to do integral over that t, right? That would be the
problem. Yeah, but the maximum it's also
non-equilibrium,
minimum
non-equilibrium. So in non-equilibrium, you might have, in equilibrium, it only depends on time difference, in non-equilibrium, you have t1, t2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
so how would the lambda pole show up in this?
Well, I don't know how to. This is a compact theory. First, you should look for the non-compact U1 if you want. Oh, okay.
So these simulations are done for.
It's just as a fixed UV coupling.
Yes. So the lattice provides you a fixed UV coupling.
I was agreeing. This is not
allowed. If I take lattice space and smaller and smaller, the lambda will become larger and larger
yes.
until it's
uh-huh.
infinity, where you get actually Eason model. Four-dimensional Eason
yeah.
model. That's
mm-hmm.
the smallest lattice space in UV and go. You cannot get it larger than infinity, the bare coupling. That's the lambda pole.
Just an operational mm-hmm. question. I didn't understand exactly how you impose the non-equilibrium conditions in real time. How does that happen? How does that enter the equation?
Okay, here is a very simple thing. You just give a time physical time equals zero, you give a configuration.
Give the phi of t and a phi dot of t.
A phi of, yes, in that sense, phi and phi dot. We tried here all the other kind of conditions, boundary condition here and there. For instance, we give something at t equals 0 and 0 at t equals n. which was the length of our time dimension. We tried different boundary conditions. But one of them is just what you say, we give phi of t and phi of t and phi prime of t. Phi prime of t would be here just the difference. You see, this is the reason why these two points have the same value. So we put phi prime equals 0.
Is it obvious that that's both necessary and sufficient? I mean, what about correlation functions? How is this
non-equilibrium density matrix specified? You'll see this afternoon, because here, as I say, it's just a very simple example.
Let me ask what I think is more or less the same question in different words, because I'm also confused about this. So, at zero of your fifth stochastic time, you're just giving some initial conditions for your dynamical variable. You now run your stochastic simulation, you get out some distribution. This is supposed to be the answer to some question in the quantum dynamics of the theory you started with.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the initial state?
Yeah,
this is the point. No.
Two times there is the Langevin time.
Right.
There you could, for instance, take some solution of your classical statistical evolution. It's for all real times.
I don't understand what quantum state in reality I'm studying the dynamics of. In this thing here is the following.
This is the real time, the physical time. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is phi of x and t. Mm-hmm. At t equals 0, we give phi of x and phi prime of x. We give these values. So here. Yeah. These are the physical initial conditions. But to start the process, you have to give that for all at theta equals 0. And then now you start the process. And you calculate phi of x and t, or the correlation and so on, going into the process. So you'll have a phi theta of x and t, where this theta is the Langevin time. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And at theta equals 0, and you have to give the values for all t. Yeah?
Fine.
So you're
yeah.
solving the question.
For instance. Or you can put it 0.
Very
yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Does not depend.
It's irrelevant. It all converges to the same.
So
let me. What's relevant is just fixing your lattice at physical time 0. What you give as a function of fifth Langevin time as initial, as starting configuration, is irrelevant. It all converges to the same thing. What is relevant is the initial condition in real time. And that's just giving your correlator at physical initial time. So take the lattice,
so let me
the first slide and update the rest. That imposes initial conditions in real time. What you do as a function of Langevin time doesn't matter. You may start from classical statistical to converge more rapidly.
Forget the Langevin time. That's just a method to calculate. Yeah. The question is, what statistical distribution are you ending up with?
Yeah. So this is like quantum mechanics when you start from quantum motion from particular coordinate place.
Yeah.
And well, you start from the underlying velocity as well. So I understand what you just said, that starting with an initial state, which happens to be infinite energy.
No, I mean Minkowski state. This is. They're not imposing initial and final coordinates.
Yeah, so this should correspond to some Schwinger Keldysh like initial condition.
Which you can compute.
And that's what you say it does.
This is a very simple thing. With Dyson Keldysh condition and with the contour and so on, you'll see more detail this afternoon. But here is just you give at t equals 0. And now let me maybe use two words. Initial for physical time and starting configuration for the Langevin algorithm. Yeah. So what we say, the result of the calculation depends on the initial condition, does not depend on the starting configuration.
But what is confusing, though, is that classically, of course, you can specify the field and its time derivative initially.
Yeah.
But quantum mechanically, I don't quite understand what that means. What is the density matrix that that corresponds to?
So when he said this, that it's simple, he just said in here, it's just left it unspecified. Yeah. You could have calculated it, but it's like it's random.
But you know
there
what
are
that
other calculations
is?
Where you specify.
Do you know what that is before you do the Langevin simulation, or you obtain it only at the end of the day?
No, you can do it precisely at the beginning of the Langevin simulation.
Okay, so
as
like
you do it with string of
we can talk after. I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to start from some quantum state, like, you know, ground state of my
Right. Right. You'll introduce a contour. I don't want to take away from. You'll introduce a contour like that in the time direction, and this you'll make a density matrix between the values of phi here and here, and this is what you'll do to have real physics there. Here it was only to show that how it works if you specify a condition at the beginning, how it develops in time.
So the question still, if you are not interested in non-equilibrium phenomena, if you just let Phillips evolve at all time, twice even at time equals zero, then you would get the quantum vacuum correlator.
Well, you have seen that for the free field before.
That's not true, because then so it's just like we do in the density matrix, you have to take care of the states which you multiply on the size. So the initial state and the end state, you have to take.
You would need to know what the vacuum is to start with, because otherwise it would evolve.
Okay, so. You can do a similar problem for the gauge theory, that because Langevin equation is a process, it's a linear equation, so it's you normally will do it in the algebra of theory, and then recalculate, introduce, take care of the compactness in recalculating the drift. Question. The systematic discretization errors, the runaway trajectories, convergence, we speak of some of them. What I want to show it now is only the following. We take an illustration for a simple problem. You can think of it as a one plucket problem after gauge fixing, but it's essentially just one integral. Take this integral here and consider this to be a pass integral. And you want to make a simulation for it. So, let us consider analytic function of z, where z is x plus i, y. The x is the one appearing here. And what I am interested are this kind of expectation values, if you want. So this is very simple. This you can calculate an expectation value of e to the i qx for this path integral, but you can use also this kind of identities to recalculate it at other p value of this p here. So you use this p like a reweighting. The Langevin equation for this process looks like that. You have to extend to complex from x to z. This is a complex action. This is a drift. This is a complex Langevin equation here. And when you do it on computer, you'll have a drift on the for the x and a drift for the y. For the real part, sorry, imaginary. Then what you do is to build averages over your process of f of z And this averages over the process should give you the quantities you are looking for. This you can test numerically, and it works, and you'll see afternoon the systematic thing. Now, how do you understand it? One interesting thing is to look for this distribution here. This is a complex distribution. It's the distribution which you'll write immediately out of the Fokker-Planck equation for this process. It's a complex quantity. If you wouldn't have this imaginary action, this should be the probability distribution. But a complex thing is a difficult probability distribution, so let's call it a distribution. Formally, this should go to e to the minus s. S is now, however, imaginary. Alternatively, you can define a true probability distribution in the two variables, x and y. You can write also for that Fokker-Planck equation, it's more complicated, but it is there. Essentially, what happens is when you sample values of x and y during your process, essentially you use this distribution in background. Now, what I want to show here is how they are related. Remember, this is a relation for analytic function f. For instance, this e to the iqz. You have the integral over x and y over this real genuine probability distribution on x and y with this analytic function is given as the integral over x, where in rho and f you put epsilon to 0. In particular, you can have for these quantities, you can get in this way the momenta of the distribution rho. So, the expectation values with this p, which essentially are what you measure when you sample your configuration, should be equal with the expectation values where you put epsilon to 0 over this distribution rho. Now I wanted to show you how this works. For rho, you have a simple equation, for a complex Fokker-Planck equation. You can rewrite it down for a Fourier transform, and it looks very easy. You work with it. And you get this kind of results for the momenta. This is discretized on the lattice about 20. And at momentum zero, for instance, you get these are the values of the momenta of the distribution rho at chi equals 0, 1, 2, minus 2, and so on. The stars which you see around here are what you get from the process itself for this. So these are the expectation value taken by sampling over configuration. The other points are obtained from the Fokker-Planck equation, complex Fokker-Planck equation, at different tau, a different Langevin time. And they seem to converge very well. And then now, you use this to compare with e to the minus s, which was your original distribution. And you'll see here, these are the points, these are for different values of, if you remember, it was in the integral, it was an e to the I beta cos theta and an I p theta, different value of this beta and this p. This is what you get, the point is what you get solving the complex Langevin equation, going to large Langevin times, and compare with the integral. The integral is the line, and the points are what you calculate from the Fokker-Planck equation. And this shows that this formal quantity, rho, which you obtain by just saying I have Fokker-Planck equation, the complex one, and so on, looks very arbitrary, so to say. Makes completely good sense. You see practically no difference.
Are there different parameters?
Yes. they are not different parameters, they are different. The focal plug equation depends on the tau, on the Langevin time. So when you go to infinite time, you have the asymptotic. So these are different times, after 2.5, 5, or 10. And they converge quite fast.
But this depends crucially on the electricity.
Yes. Yes. So you do this kind of calculation. You look for observable. You have some observable. You extend it to the analytic function which corresponds to it, and you introduce that in your process. This is what you measure. But what I wanted to put out, this works also for more complicated, like here. Again, what you calculate, the raw, the observable which calculated using the raw as a point, the observable which calculate exactly from the integral as a line. So it's nice to see that this apparently formal quantity rho makes quite good sense. So finally, what I want to say, there are some number of problems like runaways and delta tau, so step, Langevin step dependence, which I think is are not very, very tragic. We managed to overcome them, at least to interpret it.
The same method for
QCD? Yeah, this is.
Is there any
the what is the plaquette?
The one plaquette.
Yeah. I think practically.
Reason why
I think practically all quantities of interest can be obtained by extension to an analytic function. All observables of interest, because. I didn't look.
You have in mind something like just picking your favorite coordinatization of the group manifold mm-hmm. that you want to infer those with real coordinates, arbitrary but up to you,
mm-hmm.
and now just independently analytically continuing in each one of those real variables.
Right. Look here, if you want, if you write like that, cos x and ipx, yeah? And you want to do the complex Langevin simulation for that, you have to write instead of x, you have to write that z equal x plus iy. And you do a similar thing in the lattice theory. If you go into algebra, you have again the angles, and these angles you complexify. Now, it will depend very much on with which angles you start and so on, and this you'll see this afternoon.
What you can show is that if you do this complexification, and if you find the solution of your late Langevin time dynamics that is stable, so given you find the stable solution of your late Langevin time, suppose that's true, then you can show it that this altered theory, this complexified theory, fulfills the very same set of Schwinger-Dyson equations, for instance, or any identity that has to be fulfilled as the original theory. The problem is not so much that you change your observables by this complexification. The problem is the convergence.
Well, the problem is obviously stability.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, therefore, I said there are some easily manageable. I wouldn't think these are problematic, the runaways and the step size dependence. What demands more work is the kind of problems you say and which is related, which are the convergence properties of the process, where I have a trivial or non-trivial fixed point structure and so on, have metastabilities and so on. We shall see this happen.
Have you tried to do this for the UN one plaquette model?
Yes. Yes. We'll, again, this is.
Do you have a
phase one plaquette.
Where is the first
large n. Large n, you mean. No, we just try to SU2. We try to SU2 because it's interesting to see how it depends on choosing the variables.
So how about this? There will be another? Can we another talk this afternoon and stop here and continue? Otherwise,
yeah.
Saturated.
Yes, therefore, I want to.